This time in the Magic Kitchen, we are joined by Diatima Mantinea, and we're talking about Aries season.
I'm Leandra Witchwood.
And I'm Elise Wells.
And welcome to the Magic Kitchen podcast, where we talk about magic, kitchen witchcraft, herbs,
and everything in between.
The Magic Kitchen Podcast is funded and supported by thewitchwoodteahouse.com, offering a variety of hand-blended loose leaf teas as well as loose herbs for all of your ritual, spell work, wellness, and everyday enjoyment needs. If you would like to support this podcast while sipping a great cup of tea, head over to thewitchwoodteahouse.com and find the magic that's in store for you.
Diatima Mantinea is a witch and has been a professional astrologer and tarot reader for more than 30 years. She is also the author of Touch the Earth, Kiss the Sky, Allowing the Rational Mind to Welcome Magic and Spirituality. She writes for witches and pagans and teaches widely. Her passion for science led her to a degree in soil and crop science, as well as to graduate work in the field. You can visit her work at www.uraniaswell.com. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm excited.
We both really enjoyed your book, your latest book, Aries Witch. And it was nice to be able to figure out how to have you on to specifically talk about Aries season, because something you point out in the book, which again, is one of these kind of moments that I should have known this before, but we all have every sign in our chart. So we all have Aries in our chart. And depending on that configuration, Aries season is going to affect us all differently. So even if you're listening and you're not an Aries, there's so much wisdom you will glean from this as you enter Aries season with the rest of us.
Yes.
Not only that, but we all have Mars in our chart, the planet Mars, which is the ruler of Aries and Scorpio in traditional systems. And that planet kind of encapsulates the drive and the purpose of Aries as well. So yeah, it's in each chart, Aries is in a particular house of the chart, which is an area of life. For instance, yourself or your financial situation or your home situation or your career or your friendships, stuff like that. So whatever house Aries is in your specific natal chart, and it's different from pretty much everybody else's natal chart, unless they were born in exactly the same time and place that you were, then that house is going to be emphasized every Aries season, which comes around every year. Oh, who is that?
Sorry, this is cat? Willie. He's a little guy. He gets kind of like lonely sometimes, and I can see it in his eyes. He started making noise, so I knew if I just picked him up, he'd stop. Leandra gets it. She's like, there he is again.
There he is. There's one eye, Willie.
Yeah, he only has one eye. Bless him.
Oh, boy. He's a sweetie.
Yeah.
Well, maybe my cats will come in and join us, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My other one's sleeping over on the right. So they love recording time. I think it's because I set the mood. You know, I light some incense. I cleanse the space a bit, and they're like, oh, it's nice in here. Let me just close it up.
Both my cats have sun, moon, Uranus, and Venus in Aries.
Oh my gosh, that's
We get along very well, actually, but you know, they adore each other, but they have to fight every day. Because too much Aries, you have to let go of all some of that energy.
I've never thought about that, because my cats are rescues. One I rescued as an adult, so we have no clue where Emma's chart would no concept. And this guy Willie came to us also as a rescue. He actually just showed up at our door, And we knew he would need eye surgery, and that's how he ended up in the house recovering, and then the rest is history. But
and he just stayed there, right?
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah. He's very small, but we know he's full grown. He's definitely, I mean, we've had him for 2 years, but yeah, he showed up as a baby. And I do wonder that actually, like, when was he born?
Does he have an astrology chart, right?
Yeah.
My two were born to a rescue who was rescued while pregnant. So the people who rescued her, you know, knew when the kittens were born. So that's how I know they're brothers.
That's awesome.
So anyway, yeah, wherever Aries is in your chart, whatever house Aries is at in your chart, is going to be emphasized during Aries season because the sun is going through that house for you. And it's highlighting for you at least, to the issues that house designates, like, you know, friends or career or whatever. And if you have any planets in Aries, then those planets are likely to be highlighted too, because the sun moves through Aries, it will conjunct the transiting sun, the sun where it is in the sky right now, will conjunct the planets in your natal chart as it moves through Aries. And so that will emphasize those planets as well. Yeah, astrology is a little more complicated than most people think.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So what are the general themes of Aries season? What kind of things could we say? Well, what starts Aries season for us? And
well,
how does that tie
that's
in?
The thing. The zodiac is divided, as most people know, into 12 different signs. And there are three groups of four each that we call the modes. And the solstices and the equinoxes fall on the fall happen actually when the sun moves into 0 degrees of one of what we call the cardinal signs, which are the four signs that begin the seasons heralded by the solstices and equinoxes. So Aries season begins with the March equinox, which is spring in the northern hemisphere, of course, and fall in the southern hemisphere. So Aries is all about changing. Aries is all about finding a place in the world and creating a place for yourself in the world. It's the first sign of the zodiac. We love beginnings. We're real good at beginnings. So usually this particular equinox, the March equinox, feels like a new beginning, which is, you know, fairly obvious in the spring up in the northern hemisphere, but it would be the same in the southern hemisphere as well. And I think we've found that, you know, the fall can bring new beginnings as well. So because every ending is a beginning, right? So March, the spring equinox brings the Aries season. It's when the sun moves into 0 degrees of Aries, changes a little bit from year to year. It's usually right around the 21st, but this year actually it happens to fall, at least in the U.S., it will fall on the 19th. It's going to be almost midnight on the 19th here on the East Coast where I am, and so it'll be a little earlier farther west. And in Europe, of course, it won't be until the 20th. But when the equinox happens, and the equinox is the midpoint, the actual midpoint, when the sun is right between the two the two solstices, the winter solstice or the December solstice and the June solstice. And that means that the solstices happen, of course, when the sun reaches either the furthest point south in the sky, during the December solstice, or the furthest point north in the sky during the June solstice. And so when the sun reaches the midpoint between those two solstices, we have an equinox. So there's always a a tipping point, an idea of new beginnings. But there is also a sense of restoring a balance, even if just for a moment. Now, Libra, of course, is the sign of balance. Libra is the sign opposite Aries. But when two signs are opposite each other, like Libra and Aries, and each sign has its opposite, then they work to balance each other out. And Aries is the sign of the individual. People who have strong Aries placements in their charts are generally looking in this lifetime to come through and solidify their experience as a creative individual. This doesn't mean that you know, they go mowing over everybody else's rights, which is some people the way some people express Aries. But it also means
I know a few of those.
Yeah, it happens, definitely. But they, you know, they also are all about standing up for themselves. Now, Libra is the sign of relationships. And so there's a balance that needs to be found in all of us between individuality, standing up for yourself as an individual, and relationship, where you can, you know, try and understand the other person's point of view, engage with them. But both of those things have their shadow side. For instance, someone who can't stand up for themselves, who can't say, I'm okay, and I'm someone who is worthy of, you know, good things in life, is much more likely to stay, for instance, in a abusive relationship. Because to them, the relationship is the most important. They often define themselves by their relationships. And even if it's not an abusive relationship, it could be not quite a healthy relationship if both people are not, you know, are defining themselves by the relationship. So Aries is really all about defining yourself. And when I've always felt when two people are, the best relationships happen when two people are solidly rooted within themselves, when they're strong within themselves and they know what they can bring to the relationship. So the relationship is an exchange, not, you know, two people being crutches for each other. So Aries season often, you know, definitely brings new beginnings in the house that Aries is in your chart. You might also find that whatever house that is, relationships become more important for that house as well during this time. Of course, this is Aries season would be when the sun is moving through Aries. So it changes from year to year because it kind of depends on what the other planets in the zodiac are doing at that time as well, and also where the moon's nodes are. As it happens this year, we have the moon's nodes, which I won't go into detail about it, but basically the moon's nodes are important points, not planets, but points in an astrology chart that show where the moon crosses the ecliptic. But then, so the nodes are quite important, and they're in Aries right now. So we've got another Aries Libra because it's the nodal axis. The north node is in Aries, south node in Libra. So that brings a little more Aries energy to the chart. But we also have a number of planets in Taurus. We have planets in other signs. Pluto has moved into Aquarius, for instance, and Neptune is still in Pisces. So there are other planets that are affecting the general zeitgeist. And that depends very much on the relationships between the current geometric relationships between the planets, which we call aspects. So you can't give a blanket answer to what is Aries season all about, but you can say, well, you know, whatever house Aries is in your chart is definitely going to be activated as the sun is going through it.
Yeah. And
does that make sense? I hope.
Yeah. I think that's good.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think a lot good. Of people just go with either their sun sign, like, oh, that's just who I am. And, you know, they try to define themselves by the one aspect of the entire chart. And right. I, you know, and I used to do that too until I started learning about my chart and I actually, you know, went and pulled my chart up and actually looked at it, and it's complicated. It's confusing. Like, if you don't know what you're looking at, it's, you know, just there's lines and dots and wheels. And
but, I started studying astrology in 1969.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you've got a lot of experience with it.
Yeah. And I have been, I've been a professional since 1990, 91, somewhere around there. and I still consider myself a student.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with that completely. We all
are. It's amazingly complex, but you know, it's not all about your sun sign. There are three important points, very important points in anyone's chart. And this, you know, particularly with the Aries Witch book, the sun sign series that Llewellyn is putting out, all of which are backed up with written primarily by Ivo Dominguez. And then we have co-authors like me who are the sun sign. And what those books are meant to help with are not only people with that sun sign, but also people who have an Aries moon and or Aries rising as their ascendant sign.
That's me.
Are you an Aries rising?
Rising,
okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So a lot of this I related to it. Like I understood. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why I do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. You should. So, you know, the three main points in anyone's chart are the sun, the moon, and the ascendant. And you know, it used to be that nobody knew, unless they went to an astrologer, what their moon or ascendant was or anything like that. But I mean, I learned to cast charts by hand, but since the advent of computers, you know, the charts got very easy to cast. But then the advent of the internet, and finally, like, you know, as we moved into the mid-aughts, people developed websites where you could go and get astrology charts for free. And they're still out there. There are lots of them. And you can get them for free and you can use any house system you want. And people are like, I don't know what house system to use, but you know, try it, see what works for you. but I think anyone now can go to one of these sites and get their chart cast. It's important to know the time you were born, by the way. That's important for real accuracy. An astrologer can take a chart. If someone's time is unknown or uncertain, and with a lot of work can do what we call rectify the chart to get the correct time. But if you don't know the time for your chart, then you can't pay any attention to your ascendant, because you don't know what the ascendant sign is unless you know what time you were born. But at least you can usually find out what your sun and moon sign are and start with those. And people get, you know, I think this is why astrology has become so popular, is because you do this, you find out what your sun sign is and you find out where your moon sign is and you start reading up on it and you go, wow, that's cool. And then you start maybe following the transits, you know, maybe Uranus hits your sun sign and boom, all of a sudden all these things are changing for you and you go, wow, that's interesting. And then, you know, people start looking, well, where's my Mercury? Where's my Venus? And people get kind of drawn into astrology because these days it's so easy to cast a chart. And I'm really encouraged by that. Both Ivo and I are very encouraged by that. And I know that's one of the reasons that he decided to take on this project of the Sun Sign series, is because we always hope that more people, particularly magical people, will pay more attention to astrology, because it, you know, no, you don't have to know what sign the moon is in to, you know, to plan your spell. You don't have to, what we call, elect a chart, which is to, you know, decide when you're going to do a ritual or a spell, judging by the astrology. Astrology is an influence. It's not a determinative. Yeah. And I
agree. I used to, like, it always confused me. Like, yeah, I can get the chart. I can see the chart. The chart's not hard to find. Like you said, like, go to the website and get it. It's understanding it was the issue. And so I always needed that help. So that's why I appreciate these books, because you can go through all of them, and because we all have, you know, everybody has these
right
these signs in your chart.
Exactly.
And so what I started doing when I started like really looking into astrology, not to learn it because I'm still very astrology illiterate, but just to understand, yeah, just to understand mm-hmm. what affects me. So now when I journal, I note the moon and what sign the moon is in, because that seems, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because I'm mostly Pisces, but that the moon seems to really have an effect on me and what mm-hmm. sign it's in. And mm-hmm. then with my students in my community and in my courses, I actually created worksheets for them so that they could do the same, so they could start tracking it. So that when they go back and they're like, wait, I've seen this pattern before. Where did I see mm-hmm. that before? And they can go back and go, oh, that's why. And then they can check right. and see if there's any kind of lining up of these signs and placements, that sort of thing. And it's helpful because then you understand oh, every time, like, okay, Lionsgate for me, I am like Mercury retrograde. I do just fine. Like I'll have some technical issues, you know, communication issues, the minor. I think the worst thing that ever happened, like my car died. That was the worst thing that ever happened to me. But and that was, it was unexplainable. Like I've talked about mm-hmm. it before on the podcast, like the battery just died. My car is practically brand new type of thing, you know? So it was, that was random, yeah. But Lionsgate is where I have the most issue. Like Leo season just mm-hmm. grates me the wrong way for some reason. And I literally feel like I need to hide.
Or Aquarius?
You know what? Let me look at my chart. I have my chart right here.
Or Taurus.
I pulled Scorpio. It up. So let's see. So Leo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm trying to read the chart, like bear with me, because that's really confusing. Like I don't understand half of it.
Well, you know, it may well be that you do have planets in Leo, or that you know, that the sun moving through Leo is going to affect your chart every year.
Yeah, I don't see Leo, but I do see like I have a couple of placements of Aquarius, and
that's it. Aquarius is the sign opposite Leo, so when the sun's going through Aquarius, it's in an opposition aspect. Yeah. It goes through an opposition aspect,
which is interesting
in Aquarius,
because my Aquarius placement is in Mercury. It's also mm-hmm. in Venus, so that's interesting. Okay, so that, I guess that gives me some more perspective. That's cool. I don't know. I just find it fascinating, even though I don't understand it.
That's one of the great things about these books is that, you know, also Ivo delineates each sun sign with each moon sign. So you can see if you have Aries sun, Aries moon, Aries sun, Taurus moon, so on and so on through the zodiac. You can have a specific delineation for that in each one of the books as well. Plus, he explains a bit about astrology. So I think it helps people get their feet under them as to what astrology is all about.
The button didn't play. Like, I was really enjoying how you talk about Aries patterns in the book and how Aries is like drawn to that warrior role, the pathfinder role, the power role.
Yes.
And, you know, jumping headlong into things. And you have in here, I really appreciated this because I'm going to pair it with a tea that I blend. I blend a tea called Clear the Path, and you have a spell for clearing a path. So I'm going to pair those together and see what results I get.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Burn some of it. Burn some of it as incense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Aries are pioneers. We're really good at clearing paths, at, you know, at finding a way.
Yeah, I was enjoying that. I was enjoying like the patterns, and then that you put that spell in there, because I'm going to try using the tea with that spell, because I think they'll pair nicely.
You may have noticed that here at the Magic Kitchen Podcast, we don't have sponsored ads. That's because this is a fully listener-supported show. We do what we do for you, dear listener, and when you join my magical living community on Patreon, you're supporting all the time and energy that goes into setting up podcast interviews, writing articles and rituals, my paranormal mystery novel, and all that I do. And in exchange, you're getting over 10 exclusive journal prompts, rituals, witch tip videos, meditations, and more each month. If you love this podcast, consider joining my magical space. I can't wait to meet you and be an even bigger part of your magical journey. Go to patreon.com/Elise Wells or follow the link in the show notes.
Yeah, we are definitely, Aries are definitely pioneers in some way or another. Mm. You know, a lot, how much your Aries, even if it's your sun, expresses itself can be very different. For instance, I tend to be something of an introvert, which is not an Aries, particularly Aries thing. Gotcha. But my Aries sun is in my 12th house, which is the house of kind of being retired and not, you know, and hiding away and generally not engaging very much with a lot with other people. So sometimes where your house is, sometimes the aspects to your Aries sun, because people come to me, you know, and they say, well, you know, I don't think I'm an Aries, or I don't think I'm a Sagittarius, or I don't think I'm this, because I just don't fit any of those delineations. And yet, you know, I was definitely born during the time of Aries or whatever sign. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of reasons for that, which is that, first of all, there are like 9 other planets in the chart that are affecting your sun, you know. But I always say to people, there is something about Aries that you have to learn in this lifetime.
Yeah.
Because my personal belief, and not everyone shares this, but my personal belief is that we come, we're born with the chart that we need. Mm. For this lifetime. I'm a big believer in reincarnation. And I think we were born with the chart that we need. And I think that whatever your sun sign is, it's something that you have to deal with at some point and in some way. And if you're not doing mixed martial arts, then maybe you're just learning to stand up for yourself. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's really important to you in this lifetime, is learning to stand up for yourself, you know? So the chart is incredibly complex. It's, even if you know astrology very, very well, as I do, it's a constant guide for me, my chart. And once you know it, then you can turn to it when things seem problematic for you. Then you can turn to your chart and go, oh, well, yes, this is going on because, you know, my transiting Saturn is hitting my sun. And you might understand a little bit more about what's going on. But not only that, when you know that transiting Saturn's hitting your sun, you'll also know that transiting Saturn's going to move off your sun at a certain time. So you can realize, well, you know, this feeling of restriction that I have right now, this feeling that I'm being forced perhaps onto a path that I'm not particularly fond of, or that other people are restricting my movements in some way, then, you know, if you can see that is going to end at a certain point in time, then it's a little easier to deal with in the moment. And also, you can figure out what the lessons are. I used to have a little bookstore, which I write about in the book, a little metaphysical bookstore that I loved dearly, but came a time when I realized that this was not a long-term path for me. This was not something I really wanted to do long-term. And so I sold the store, and it was, it was very difficult, and when I did that, when I sold the store, I knew I was doing the right thing, no question about it. And then I had to do all of these other things that required a considerable amount of self-discipline. And I did them, and I ended up with a fabulous job for about 3 years working at Smithsonian Magazine that pretty much trained me for my second business, which was a virtual assistance business. And that and my astrology business are the two things that have been supporting me for, you know, for the last 25 years, almost, I guess now. And that, if I hadn't sold my store, if I'd hung on, it would have been a problem. But because I had my chart as a guide, I knew it was time for me to make these changes. And so when the opportunity came, and it did, I stepped into it. I made the change. And I'm very glad I did. It's not always easy to do, but when you can look at your chart or have an astrologer look at your chart and see that, yes, the timing here is right and it may not be easy, but this is when I'm going to do it. Or alternatively, excuse me, look at your chart and go, wow, everything looks like it's easing up. And now I have an easy path to do what I want. It really helps to understand the timing. And that's something else that astrology does very well.
Yeah. And that really helps us know when it's not just us too, you know, like sometimes, like I always say, if we can lean on if we can't lean on our magical practice to guide us through life's challenges, what is it doing for us? And I think that's why we had Evo on the podcast just the previous episode, actually. And we talked about that, how he was saying how, like, as the craft has sort of progressed in time, like astrology comes and goes as a keystone for people's practices or not, but that it's such an important one to have, even if, you know, like Leandra and I are not astrologers by trade by any stretch, but I find it so helpful when I can understand my own chart or when I have some rudimentary connection to, you know, to the sign that's going on, especially for the moon. I also feel very guided by the moon. So Aries moons actually are always the best for me. They're clear. I'm always motivated to do my ritual. I always end up upping the game without meaning to in my rituals because the energy feels right too. And I never feel like I have to plan them. Like I know what to grab. I know what to bring with me into circle. And then I don't know exactly how I'm going to use it, but I know I will. And then it happens and it works.
Yep.
If that makes any sense.
that's because the Aries moon is going over your Aries ascendant. And so that that strengthens you and you discovering your place in the world. And what you need.
It's such a grounding energy for me.
Knowledge. Well, Aries is not usually thought of grounding as grounding for most people, but this is an example of how things, you know, how things work for the individual. It's a fire sign, of course. So actually it's very creative. And I think it probably fires up your creativity as well.
Which is the grounding thing for me. Exactly. Yeah, I'm a writer mostly. That's my creativity, you know, but I write better poetry, you know, like it's the creative writing that comes through.
It's inspiration. That's another thing that all fire signs, that's a gift of the fire signs is inspiration. And so when you're inspired, when you know that you're doing the right thing, that you're creating what you need to create, that in itself can be very grounding.
I think for me, my Aries activates me because I'm double Pisces. So those, I don't know, I guess it's more of a, let's see what happens kind of energy.
Go with the flow.
Yeah, go with the flow. Like, let's just, let's be malleable here. Where my Aries, I think it boils that water and it like, no, we're going to do this now. We need some pressure. You know, we need to do this.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, I mean, I am, you know, I'm in agreement with Evo that astrology comes and goes in the craft, but I also think that it's going to become more of a staple now because of the ease of casting charts. You have no idea how complex it is to cast a chart by hand. I mean, it would take
Even comprehend. Yeah.
You know, you've got to have your tables of houses. You've got to have your ephemeris right there. You've got all of this stuff going on. And I mean, these days when a client comes to me and I cast the charts I need, to work with them. It would have, you know, in times past for me to cast the natal chart, the progress chart, figure out the solar arcs and the transits, that all of that probably would have been an hour, you know, to cast several different charts and look at the transits and all of that. Now it's just, I you know, a few, type in a little bit of data, hit a couple of buttons, and boom, there are all the charts I need. And that allows me to give a lot more time to actually figuring out the chart instead of actually creating the chart from scratch. Plus, it makes it a lot less likely for errors. A friend of mine put a picture of a chart that her mother cast for her up on social media, I guess about a month or so ago. And I said, oh, good, now I have her birth data, because it was written on the chart. And so I went into my my astrology software and put in her data and cast her chart. And the rising sign that her mother said she had was not actually her rising sign. So, you know, that was interesting. There were a lot more errors made back in the days when charts were cast by hand.
Yeah. I had mine cast by hand, I don't know, probably about 15 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. And when I had it redone by someone who had been doing it for a while, like, yeah, there was a lot of information that was wrong. And it started to make sense after it was corrected. I was like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's, you know, it's interesting too that people still have this misapprehension that astrology, and I just saw this in a book that was published recently, and I was very disappointed. I think a lot of the author, and he didn't do his background research, frankly, but that certain types of astrology are more accurate than others. This whole concept of the precession of the equinoxes, so that now at, you know, the spring equinox, the constellation of Pisces is rising in the background. And so therefore the charts that Western astrologers cast are wrong. That simply isn't the case. The constellations have nothing to do with the astronomy of Western astrology. The astronomy of Western astrology is based, it's what the astronomers call a geocentric celestial, ecliptic celestial coordinate system. And it's absolutely accurate, it's not based on and doesn't take the constellations into account. I have a whole article about this on my website, and called The Astronomy of Astrology. And I, as an example, I use the metaphor of what I call Big Barn Lane. And if you are, you know, if you are 200 years ago, for instance, there was this farm and there was this farmhouse there. And then across the road from the farmhouse, there was this big barn. And, you know, 50 years goes by or whatever, and the farmer sells off the piece of land with the barn on it. And the rich folk from the city who bought the land decide that they want to make that barn their house, but really they'd rather have it on a different point in the property. Meanwhile, everybody's been calling the road that crosses in front of this barn Big Barn Lane, right? So the new owners take the barn and they move it off to another point of the property. That doesn't change the name of Big Barn Lane, nor does it change the location of Big Barn Lane.
Right.
And that's basically what's going on with the constellations. The constellations have moved on, but the constellations are not what we use when we cast a chart. We are looking at the relationship between the Earth and the Sun, and we determine the position of the planets accurately in relationship to the Earth and its position, you know, relative to the planets. and the sun. So I can cast a chart on my handy dandy iPad, and there's a wonderful piece of software I use called iFemeris, which has a sky now thing that if I hit it, it shows me exactly, it casts a chart for my location at the exact time and place I'm at right now. And, you know, if it's night, I can look at that chart and I can see where the planets are, and I can walk outside and I can look up into the sky. And by looking at the chart, I can place the planets in the sky. I can say, okay, well, if I'm facing south, then right now, you know, Jupiter is going to be off there to my left, just rising in the sky. And I should be able to see Venus just setting over over in I'm sorry, Jupiter is rising in the east over on my left, and then Mercury or Venus would perhaps be setting on my right. And I would know that just by looking at the chart. The chart accurately places the planets relative to the time and place where you are right now. So this whole business, and the whole business about, I can never remember how to pronounce it. Anyway, the 13th sign, the serpent, Ophicus, something like that. Anyway, it annoys me when people bring that up. It's not a 13th sign. The signs are based on the ecliptic. It's a 12, it's a 12-fold division of the ecliptic into signs of 30 degrees each. And that's, you know, that's not going to change because it's not based on the constellations. So,
yeah. Very interesting. I wish I could go back in time and talk to my freshman year astronomy professor who got all smug about, and for those of you who believe in astrology, there's not even only 12 signs, blah, blah, blah. I remember his little lecture very well on that, because I was like, I don't think he knows much.
Yep. There's another article on my website called "You Don't Really Believe in Astrology, Do You?" And it's about the intersection between science and reality, and how the way that science has treated astrology is not very scientific at all, actually. And it's really a shame. You know, you can really tell when people are emotionally wrapped up in something, and because they feel threatened by it and they won't even look at the evidence. So, you know, and there actually is pretty convincing evidence about the validity of astrology, but trying to quote prove astrology through science would be is a very, very challenging scientific project, and it requires at the very least that the scientists themselves have some understanding of astrology. And as your astronomy professor demonstrated, most of them don't even understand the basic facts, you know, the basic astronomy of astrology. And they're, you know, and astronomy is based on astrology, really. It was, astrologers were the first astronomers, and so it's not as though we just make this up and pull it out of thin air. There is some actual, you know, astronomy there that is, you know, that is always part and parcel. Now, personally, I don't believe that, you know, another argument that is often made against astrology is, well, there is absolutely no way that Pluto can have, or even Saturn can have any effect on our life on Earth, because there's just no way that gravitational, blah, blah, blah. As soon as I hear gravitational, I tune out because I know where they're going with it. And in fact, I don't believe that, you know, that the planets like emit rays that come to Earth and they affect us, and it's all very deterministic. But to believe that astrology has a correlation, not causal effect, but correlative effect, or a correlation with life on Earth, you have to look at the basis of life very differently. And so there are, what we're seeing now is more and more as science gets closer and closer to some of the real critical questions of how reality is created, we're getting closer and closer to understanding that. We see more and more that there are patterns and connections that we never that we never thought of before. And there, we don't have to know the mechanism. And this is one thing I go into in my article. This is the reason that Carl Sagan, of all people, refused to sign the polemic against astrology that about 120 some scientists published back in 1975 in the New York Times. He said, because there were several reasons. He didn't like the authoritarian tone, for one thing. But also, he said, there's a demand for mechanism that that is not necessary. And he used some examples of, for instance, the whole concept of continental drift. The guy who came up with that was driven out of the community of scientists, of geologists, because nobody would believe that the continents could drift, because they couldn't think of a mechanism for it. The reason they couldn't think of a mechanism for it is because they didn't know about, you know, this great heat engine in the center of the Earth that actually drives drives the motion of the continents. But the fact that we don't know how something works doesn't mean it doesn't work. And it doesn't mean it is unscientific to think that it works. When I was, you know, when I first went to college back in the mid 70s, I'd taken a few years off after high school, and I knew a lot about astrology by then. I packed away my astrology books after about the first 3 months, because it was very clear to me that, oh my goodness, I can't be an astrologer and be a scientist as well. But then once I got into grad school, I was going through some tough times, and I pulled out my chart. I wanted to look at it. And then I pulled out the astrology books, and it really helped me figure out what was going on in my life and what direction I needed to take. And I realized that it is really not scientific to say astrology, you know, just doesn't work, when my personal experience and the personal experience of literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people alive today say that it does. Intelligent, highly educated people. One of my major teachers was a Harvard graduate. You know, the people who believe in and use astrology are not stupid. They are not poorly educated. They do not have, well, some of them maybe, I don't know, but at least the people I studied from, you know, they do not have some kind of major psychological problems that you know, has them all believing in conspiracy theories. Astrology works. And the fact that we don't know how it works doesn't mean it doesn't work. I would love to see science and astrology work together more to help figure out, you know, how, what more we can know about astrology by studying it in a scientific manner. But just to dismiss it on the basis of we don't know the mechanism is really not scientific, especially if you're just denying your own experience.
Right. Yep. And there's so many things we don't know the details of, and we don't have to know the details to know that they work. So sometimes it's just a matter of, I don't know, chilling out.
Well, and you know, and right now there's this huge issue in both science and philosophy, and in science, it's the whole concept of strict scientific materialism, which says that everything is based in the material world. There is nothing outside of the material world, and that we must look at everything from that perspective. So that, for instance, there is no such thing as spirits. There is no such thing as life after death, despite the fact that there's a ton of evidence out there that points in a very different direction. There is no such thing as consciousness that is outside of the brain, that the brain creates consciousness. But then there's another point of view, which is reflected in some interpretations of quantum physics. And I'm not, nor do I ever, put myself out there as a physicist, as someone who can as someone who can speak knowledgeably about quantum physics, but I can take what actual theoretical physicists have said and say that one of the interpretations of quantum physics suggests that consciousness is the source of our physical reality, not the other way around. And there is a branch of philosophy, there's philosophical materialism. And then there is also a branch of philosophy that is, the word just went flying out of my head, and I know it so well. I'm getting old. Anyway.
I hate it when that happens. It's not uncommon.
that also suggests that consciousness is what is behind material reality. So there's a lot of, to my way of thinking, there are a whole lot of things that scientists could be concentrating on besides trying to cut down astrology.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like, well, it's also like why we don't argue with the trolls when they comment, online. It's like, we can be doing more important work.
Yeah, better ways to spend our energy.
Sometimes I will take on a question that may seem to be trolling, or I will correct a misapprehension. But yeah, taking on the trolls is never a good idea.
Hey there, witches. Did you know that there's an entire community out there dedicated to you and your journey? The Rebel Mystic community is a space where I offer my decades of knowledge and experience to witches just like you. I do this through live events, monthly mentoring, monthly rituals, a book club, and other resources like workbook pages and meditations. There is even a complete self-paced course library you can access. Check the link in the show notes to learn more about this community and how to become a member. Blessed be.
How did you get to specializing in soil and crop science?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Especially when I grew up in Manhattan.
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah, I have always adored plants. We lived in a high rise in Manhattan when I was a kid. And one day I in those high rises, or at least back then, this was in the late 50s and 60s, at least back then, and I think probably it's the same is true now, there were chutes that went, all the way down to the basement where there was a furnace. So you would take your garbage out and you'd put your garbage down the chute and it'd fall down the chute into the furnace. And the chute was always by the service elevators. And so one day I'm taking the garbage to the chute and somebody had put an old fig tree out there, a rubber plant, they call them. And it was pretty sad looking, but I picked it up and I brought it home and I brought it back to our apartment, and my mother sort of shrugged and said, well, yeah, you can keep it. And I had some sunshine in the windows in my room, so I put it there and it flourished. And I have just always loved plants, always, and nature. and it's when I first went to college, and I had taken several years off after high school. When I first went to college, I knew that I wanted to study something to do with plants. I was thinking botany, or my grandmother thought I should be a florist or a landscaper. I disagreed. But I took, there were certain classes I would have to take pretty much no matter which direction I went in with my major. And one of the first classes I took was a class in soil science. And my teacher was a brilliant and inspiring guy, still is. And he got me so interested in soil science that I just never looked back. And of course, then I studied botany and plant physiology and soil chemistry and soil physics and all of this good stuff. And I was absolutely fascinated. And then, of course, I realized that really wasn't what I wanted for a career. I was honestly just fulfilling my own curiosity. But it has stood me in good stead. You know, I've been growing at least some of my own food for, at least the last 30 years now. So, yeah, I just followed my bliss, I guess, is what it is. I've never been one to try and fit in with consensus reality.
Yeah, that's awesome. My main work is with land spirits and connecting the spirits of place, and beyond gardening, more looking at, you know, what was on this planet before people, what remembers mm-hmm. the sea coming to these shores for the first time? How are those spirits still here? How can we connect to them in our craft? That's kind of my my operating thesis as a witch, in a way. Yeah. And that's fascinating to look at soil health. I've been reading The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Volleben. Mm-hmm. And I need to just read it again and again, because he's giving so much information about the science of tree magic, really. Like, he wouldn't use the word magic, but no. The way soil works is so inhabited. Yeah. And then the most fascinating thing he talked about, I forget the name of these little guys. I want to say he called them like weevils, but that doesn't sound right. But there's these little cute little tiny, tiny things. You know, you need a microscope to notice, but they live in the soil only in old growth forests. Like medieval forests, like an old forest that's a few hundred years old, they don't have them. They have to have existed from those times. You know, they're almost like a prehistoric creature that is still living, but only in certain places. Yeah. And it just makes you think, because it's another example, like you were saying about astrology and science, you know, we don't always know the why, but we know we feel it, right? We can go to an old forest and feel something different than we feel around young trees. Mm-hmm. Why? Is it our heads? Are we projecting that? No, there's more to it. I don't have to know the name of that little organism and the millions of others. That's like one. There's so many little scientific shifts in soil because of the age of the trees that we intuitively do feel, that we do feel ancestrally connected, because there is something in those trees that our ancestors knew. You know what I mean? Those trees knew our ancestors in a way.
Consider that the tree is conscious.
Exactly.
That will blow the mind of any hardline materialist. But in fact, the hardline materialism does not connect with the experience of most indigenous societies, where you find that animism, this concept of consciousness that exists outside of human consciousness, even outside of animal consciousness. And if you consider the fact that maybe consciousness is the source of the universe, then it's just a question of what are the different kinds of consciousness? What are the different, perhaps, levels of consciousness that we are dealing with? But it's all conscious. And we're not alone in the world either. We're constantly constantly surrounded by consciousness and conscious beings.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I was speaking with my online community members. I have an online magical living space where, we just kind of connect and grow together in our disparate groups. You know, some of us are in different continents than each other. So it's just a nice way to connect with folks, like-minded folks, about our craft. And something somebody said that was really interesting, we were talking about the ways we can use the craft to improve our mental health, which is, of course, a myriad of ways. Every way really improves our mental health. Mm-hmm. But one person said something that stuck with me. sometimes I forget that I'm actually never alone, that my spirit team is there mm-hmm. even when my friends can't go out for a drink or I can't mm-hmm. get out on, you know, out for a walk or something. Like, mm-hmm. and that's it. It's that inspirited, yeah. you know, I'm a hard animist. It's that inspirited world that we build around us that, yeah, it almost makes being alone in the physical more rewarding than being present with others in the physical, because we have such a vibrant experience.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, absolutely. I live alone, alone and I love it. You know, people yeah. think that if you live alone, you must be lonely all the time. I'm not lonely. Nah. I mean, I have friends, I have family and I connect with them, but I am never alone. I live on 2 acres halfway up a mountain in Western North Carolina, and boy, this land is alive, you know, yeah. and the spirits are alive, and I am cared for, and I know that the land spirits are there and they're connected to me and I'm connected to them. So I have neither the time nor the inclination to be lonely, because there's always other consciousnesses around me.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. North Americans get really like down on themselves sometimes, like, oh, we don't have Stonehenge here. We don't have ancient Greek temples. We don't have sacred sites. We don't have spirits of place. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So much of North America is wow. untouched in a way,
yeah.
you know, like it's such an opportunity. And it sounds like that's the kind of land you're on as well. Yeah. Just settled, quiet.
Yeah. It's not untouched, because I don't think anything around here much there outside of the national forests is still untouched, but, but it's, you know, there's a lot of uninhabited forest. Let's put it that way. Currently uninhabited yeah. forest.
Nice.
And
that's lovely.
And the mountains themselves, you know, it's a very strong presence.
Are you enjoying the show? If you are, we'd really appreciate a 5-star review. It helps us to reach more listeners like you and to keep doing the Magic Kitchen podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. It was a really great conversation. It's an episode I can tell will be a repeat for people. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to play again and again, because there was so much information that beginners or advanced practitioners will learn from in this, especially with regards to the misnomers around astrology,
right.
which is a great surprise. Mm-hmm. You never know how an interview is going to go, like what direction it's going to take it. And I think this was a really mm-hmm. rich episode. I'm really, really excited to share this with everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And where can people find you to keep in touch and find your books as well?
Right. Right. Well, uraniaswell.com is my website. That is uraniaswell.com. Urania was the goddess of the ancient Greek goddess of astrology and astronomy. And her well, for me at least, is the well of the ancient of the night sky. So uraniaswell.com. Mm-hmm. And I have whole bunch of stuff there. I have a blog that I update probably about 9 or 10 times a year. I try to go for a new moon blog post every month, but doesn't always work out that way. And my books are there, and of course my services. I am a consulting astrologer, so if you want me to read your chart, that's the place to get started.
Yeah.
And also the articles that I mentioned in our chat are right on the homepage. You can link to them. The Astronomy of Astrology, and You Don't Really Believe in Astrology, Do You? those two articles you can link to right from the homepage.
And we'll put that in the show notes for everybody as well, so you can find that directly.
Absolutely. Merry meet,
merry part.
And merry meet again. Thank you for joining us on the Magic Kitchen podcast. Please visit my website, leandrawitchwood.com, for news, information,
and more episodes.
I'm Elise Wells, and I can be found at Seeking Numina on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and seekingnumina.com. That's Seeking, N-U-M-I-N-A.